Day, February 12th, 2013, Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. If your car is making that noise in the parking lot, please get up and go address that now.
Thank you.
All right. This is a Board of Aldermen work session, so we do not normally receive public comment during our work sessions, but rather have kind of reserved the time for the Board of Aldermen to have more in-depth discussions of issues that are matters that are on our agenda for tonight. Before we begin our discussion tonight, we have one charge to be issued to a newly appointed member of one of our commissions. Is Kim Calandra here? Even before Kim is recognized. Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know. I was like, it's Mardi Gras.
It's Mardi Gras. Kim, she's awesome.
Okay, just so that people don't think that Michelle has completely lost it.
Yeah.
It is Mardi Gras.
It's like Michelle.
All right. Now that we recognize that it is Mardi Gras, Kim, if you would come up and stand before our town clerk, Kathy Wilson, right here. Kathy will read you your charge.
Kim is a recent appointee of the Appearance Commission. As a member of the Appearance Commission, I will, one, initiate, promote, and assist in the implementation of programs of general community beautification within the town's planning jurisdiction. Two, seek to coordinate the activities of individuals, agencies, organizations, and groups, public and private, whose plans, activities, and programs bear upon the appearance of the town and its environs. Three, direct the attention of the mayor and board of aldermen to ways in which the town government may take direct action affecting the appearance of the town and its environs. Four, make recommendations upon any permit or other item referred to the commission by the board of aldermen, planning board, board of adjustment, or administrator. Without limiting the generality of the foregoing, the Commission's recommendations regarding development permit applications may address the appearance or design of proposed development projects. Five, appoint subcommittees consisting of Commission members or advisory groups consisting of Commission members, persons who are not non-Commission members, or any combination thereof, to advise and assist the Commission in carrying out its duties. Six, take any other action authorized by the Carrboro Board of Aldermen. I'm sure all of that was really clear. If you agree, would you sign this, please? Thank you. Welcome. Thank you. And you can meet the mayor and board of aldermen.
Thank you, Kim.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Kim. We really appreciate everybody who participates in being a part of Carrboro Town Government through our advisory boards. So thank you. That brings us to the consent agenda, item A. Mr. Manager.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, members of the board, I'm supposed to propose that you add an item at the beginning of the meeting to have a closed session to negotiate the terms of the possible acquisition of real property pursuant to North Carolina General Statutes 143-318-11A5. And Bob, do you want to, if you're so inclined.
And I think Annette is here, but there's a piece of property that the town may be interested in acquiring, or at least looking into acquiring, and we need to get the board's instructions on that this evening. So that's a closed session item.
All right. Hopefully it will not take us too long to get to that matter. Unless there's objection from any member of the board.
I'm excited about it.
Okay. Well, we'll consider that to be a item, we'll call it item C, on our board agenda. And I believe that brings us to A1 through 4. Mr. Manager.
Okay, thank you. There are four items on the consent agenda. The first item is a cost of living pay increase for the 25 part-time, temporary part-time employees, most of those in Parks and Recreation. That was just omitted from the accidentally from the original budget resolution for 12-13. The second item is Lieutenant Delbert Powell will be retiring March 1st of this year after 24 and a half years of service, and we're asking to the board to approve a resolution to award him his service sidearm. Also, item three is to allow the town manager to negotiate a contract for services for animal control with Orange County. And the fourth item, this was brought up to the board probably about a month ago, and that is authorization to enter into an agreement with the Wild Food and Herb Market. Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Madam?
I have a question about a question on three and a question on four, so one of each.
All right. I'll take that as a motion for items one and two. All those in is there a second? All those in favor of items one and two?
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. What's your question on number three?
Okay, on number three, which is the animal services request to authorize negotiation for a contract for animal services with Orange County. I'm wondering, does this contract, would this include potentially any deer contraception program that we could potentially move towards at some later point?
I believe it possibly could, but I don't want to speak out of turn. I know, Carolyn, you? Yeah, sure.
Recognizing that things can change in the future, I'll just tell you where we've been with this discussion. I think the Wildlife Commission finds that it's nearly impossible to effectively utilize a contraceptive method in our area. I know that Orange County Animal Services and the municipalities have looked into that. It's open, it's something to consider, but thus far we've not found a way to do that that anybody could afford or really follow up on.
Does Orange County have the same animal control rules and regulations as we do? I guess my main point is, are they as nice?
I would say, yes, I would say that they are. And the good thing about this arrangement is that they recognize that the town of Carrboro has its own ordinances and its own procedures. And they have agreed that they will conduct business in our fashion and follow our ordinance and our procedures.
So, like, the appeals process would still be in place?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Yes.
Thank you.
I believe you serve on our animal control
board of appeals. She's
there. That's what she's
there. Yes, excellent. All right. Is there a motion for the resolution?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
And on item four, and I know we mentioned this when the Wild Food and Herb Market was first discussed. I'm just wondering about labeling of any samples with nuts or not having samples out with nuts that children unaware could come up and sample. How does that work, and how are we covered for that?
You're thinking in terms of allergies?
Yeah, anaphylactic shock specifically.
Right. Mr. Attorney?
Well, I don't think we have anything specifically in the contract as it's written right now that covers that. You know, we're requiring insurance to be provided, but that's kind of an after-the-fact remedy, if you will. But I don't see why we couldn't have...
We have nuts at the farmer's market.
I'll say.
Well, I guess David was just pointing out to me there is a provision in the contract requiring that all food items sold must comply with state and local health regulations. Now, to the extent that they have labeling requirements, the vendors at the market are going to have to comply with those.
What's the extent of the liability policy that's required for the market?
I want to say it was $1 million.
It was
$1 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a pretty good level of protection.
Well, I only ask that because, you know, very often there are taster plates out at the table, and if there's a young child who is not monitoring their own food intake and walks over and takes it, you know, and I've never really thought about it in terms of the farmer's market, but I've never seen nuts out at the, you know, seen nuts. nuts.
We could write it into
you know,
the
let's say it's a brownies with nuts or some kind of cake with nuts. You know, do you know what I'm saying? It doesn't have to be the nuts themselves.
We could write something, a provision like that into the agreement that said extra precautions or extra labeling efforts if that's important
to you. I think
it
seems like a
paragraph.
Reasonable proposal. For
sure. I would suggest that we have paragraph 6 has A through F. We can add a G addressing the labeling of nut-containing products.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that would be great.
Thank you.
And also letting the organizers of this know about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that might not be.
Yeah, I'm sure they're as interested in the issue as you are, Randy. So, but thank you for bringing it forward. All right, so I'm going to take that.
No, quick comment.
I'm going to take that as a motion from Randy. Go ahead.
I'll second the motion, but I have also a comment, and that is, you know, notice that we like for this first year. As part of this, you know, agenda item, we're waiving the rental fees and we're incurring some staffing costs. And I think we all kind of agreed to that because we want to see this kind of get up and going. But, you know, if they're successful, I mean, they are charging space rental fees and so forth. So that it might be something, hopefully they're successful and we can revisit this next year.
Okay, very good. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. I believe that brings us to item B1. Mr. Manager.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, members of the board, Jeff Brubaker will like to present a report to the board regarding the impact of development on the traffic, downtown traffic in Carrboro.
So this is the third in a series of reports on downtown traffic in Carrboro. And just to, as a refresher on the previous two, way back in November of 2011, the board heard a presentation on just basically an overview of town goals and policies related to downtown traffic and vitality and so forth. And those were included in Vision 2020 and other adopted policy documents and studies. Through this report and the next report, which was in March of last year, the board heard about the Weaver Street reconstruction. Obviously, it was a very successful project. Weaver Street looks great now and a very stable road. There were some traffic impacts, as we expected. And so we got an idea of what those traffic impacts were. So we talked a little bit more about how average annual daily traffic in Carrboro, in downtown Carrboro specifically, has gone down since the late 90s, or since the early 2000s. If you remember, there was a graph that showed pretty much at all count locations where NCDOT takes counts, traffic has gone down. So it's not a small accomplishment to be able to hold traffic volumes steady in a growing region. I think that speaks to the investment that has been made in alternative transportation in town. Some of the other information that we covered in the March report had to do with the projected trips of approved developments in downtown Carrboro and Chapel Hill, and some data on bicycle and pedestrian levels, and also information on signal timing and how it relates to, you know, pedestrian level of service. So, and then a couple weeks ago, there was, of course, a memo on level of service related to holding an event, specifically the Open Streets Day event coming up in April. So this report covers specifically level of service at intersections, and the methodology for analyzing this is using Synchro traffic analysis software. And it's very preliminary. It's a work in progress. But we have been able to create a model of traffic in downtown Carrboro out to 2014, assuming that all approved developments will be built. And, of course, that may or may not happen, but the model gets pretty close at, you know, finding out what traffic's going to look like when those developments are built out. And we have a very modest 1% growth per year in downtown traffic due to some other developments that are not included, like in Chapel Hill. There are several caveats to this model noted in the memo in Attachment B, so I'd urge you to pay attention to those. And so we just basically took a look at five different intersections, the first, of course, being the intersection of Main Street, Franklin Street, Merritt Mill, Brewer Lane, the Silk Road, the Road to Damascus, El Camino Real. Just about every road intersects at this intersection. So we are still in the process of analyzing what the intersection level of service looks like, but there are some signs from other traffic impact analyses that we've gotten that this intersection, obviously it has very heavy traffic in the p.m. peak hour, and specifically approaches like the Merritt Mill approach are backed up and can sometimes be difficult to get through that intersection from there. The 300 East Main and the Green Bridge traffic impact analyses projected that the intersection as a whole would have approaches with level of service F, or the worst level of service. But there's a difference. The 300 East Main traffic impact analysis predicted that intersection would be level of service D, whereas the Green Bridge predicted it would be level of service F.
Jeff, what is that little road on Main Street coming down here?
This is Main Street. There's physically no gap here, but are you talking about this one? Yeah, there's physically no gap here. That's just the way that the model depicts it. Jackie.
When the driveway to the parking deck comes in there, right, like where the 40 is or in between, up a little bit further, yeah, that parking deck's going to, I presume, fill up. Has that been factored into this?
We haven't yet, but we will in subsequent. When we keep working on this, we will build that in.
Because that's going to be really
significant.
That's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And this right here is Brewer Lane. And this is, you can see that we overlaid the model on top of the actual street grid. It doesn't matter for the sake of the model that Brewer Lane is a little bit this way. You want to get the intersection volumes and signal timings right. So,
because that would have been perfect for a roundabout.
it looks better than maybe it actually.
Yeah, right.
This is the main Lloyd intersection, and this is at the heart of the bottleneck of east-west traffic, and the analysis that we have so far projects either a level of service D or a level of service F for this intersection after build-out of all developments. there was a signal memo done by Main Street Properties that recommended protected lefts into the site, which has always been the understanding with what would happen with that site driveway once Main Street Properties was built. And, of course, there's been past desire from separate sources for a protected left into Lloyd Street to accommodate the significant left-turning traffic that you have at that intersection. So when we initially modeled this intersection in our model, it showed level of service D. But then when we simulated it in the traffic simulation software, it was not showing those protected lefts. So when we turned those protected lefts on, it showed level of service F. It showed major congestion at the intersection. And that's not due to any one development. That's due, of course, to all of the approved developments that we are included in this model. But you can see right here that, you know, there's a lot of traffic. And, you know, there's over 1,000 vehicles going west at the p.m. peak hour. And there's also over 1,000 going east. So we need to keep an eye on this intersection and you know, find out, you know, how it's going to work with the protected lefts once they go in.
To be clear, so, I mean, when you say protected left, you mean like a left turn only lane or storage? Is
that? Yeah, protected in this case, it would be a left turn arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Without a separate left turn lane. So these two lanes right here, if you can see it, the inside lanes are through left. So
there's no room for, I mean, basically the buildings are sort of close enough to the street that there's no room for, or the streets, the amount of land that's sort of owned by the public is narrow enough that there's not room for a separate left turn lane.
Well, the memo I referred to actually did take a look at, well, what happens if in the westbound direction you take this departure lane away and you make, you know, for eastbound vehicles, and then instead you make this a westbound left turn only lane.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that the congestion was worse because there's only one departure lane going eastbound, and that's one lane for a real lot of cars. So they said, well, let's have the left, the protected lefts, the green left arrows, but we won't change the lane configuration at all.
Just to really kind of get down to the specifics. The point being, well, there is some there hypothetically is a way to create a left turn only lane there, but there's not room to do that. Without a left turn only lane would have to replace one of the through lanes.
Exactly.
Right now.
Exactly.
If that was how we were going to do it.
That's exactly right, because we all know how close the building footprints are on the north side. what they propose what they basically modeled is a lead leg situation, and I'm going to stop here and say I'm not a traffic engineer, so some of this is a learning curve for me, but in terms of what I understand a lead leg situation is you have westbound traffic through movements get the green, and left turning movements get the green at the same time, and eastbound traffic is stopped. That green arrow disappears, and then both through directions have the green light. And then westbound traffic gets the red. Eastbound through continues to have the green, but they also get the green arrow. So the westbound protected left is the leading signal, and the eastbound protected left is the lagging signal, but both do get protected left turns. So, anytime you give more green to a certain movement, you're taking away green from another movement. And so anytime you have the protected lefts, that very heavily trafficked through movement is stopped. And another factor to point out with this intersection is that there's longer than 60-second signal lengths for Main Street. And we do have some demand, of course, for pedestrians crossing right here. And anything over 60 seconds in signal length is generally seen as not as beneficial for pedestrians. Pedestrians are more likely to cross on the red. And I admit I did that yesterday when I was out there looking at the traffic here. So
make a note in his personnel file, please.
I'm the only one who's ever done that. So that's kind of what we want to keep an eye on this intersection, because it really is the bottleneck right there, and there's a lot of movements competing for green time. The main Weaver-Roberson intersection, the overall intersection has level of service C projected by our analysis, level of service D projected by the signal memo that I discussed. But really, the most difficult approach is the Weaver Street approach. You don't get very long signal length for that, and yet you still have, 235 cars in the peak hour trying to turn left from Weaver onto Main. You also have some cars turning, of course, into Carmel Mall that can temporarily block that queue. Mm-hmm. So. And in the westbound direction, you have queuing, of course. I think everybody's seen this personally, where the queue backs up across the railroad tracks. So moving on to Main and Greensboro intersection, we projected that this intersection is level of service C, and that pretty much agrees with some of the other TIAs that were done, like the one for 201 North Greensboro Street. So there doesn't seem to be any major issues coming up with this intersection in terms of traffic congestion. It is, this just gives you an idea of, pedestrians and cyclists that per hour. And you get 100 to 150 here and about 40 to 75 cyclists. That's, of course, seasonally dependent to some extent. But you have a significant amount of cyclists and pedestrians in the p.m. peak hour at this intersection. Especially the biggest movement for cyclists is northbound left. So folks coming from the Libicotton Bikeway and going down Roberson Street, turning right, and then taking a left onto Main. And then finally, the Greensboro-Weaver intersection. The 300 East Main, our analysis projected a level of service C. And I'm sorry, that's the wrong image, sorry about that. I can bring it. And in your memo, you should have the right image. The 300 East Main traffic impact analysis projected level of service E with the northbound approach level of service F. And that's the real big story about traffic at this intersection, is that the northbound approach, the traffic backs up into the Main and Greensboro intersection. The 201 North Greensboro Street traffic impact analysis projected this at level of service C after build-out of that development. The 500 North Greensboro Street projected at level service D with the westbound approach, level of service E. And, of course, you have here even more pedestrians than the Main and Greensboro intersection. You have 150, and you have about 75 cyclists per hour. So you want to pay attention to signal timing at this intersection. If you have very long signal timing, over 60 seconds, it's not as beneficial to pedestrians, like I said. So with that, I'll end with a movie. And don't have high expectations about the graphic qualities of this movie, but. Let's see if we can get it to play here.
Maybe not.
Well, we have low expectations.
Now, here we go.
Oh, cool.
Live shot?
Yeah, it's live from outer space.
Is that live?
No.
Ah. It kind of reminds me of Pong. Anybody old enough to remember Pong?
What time period is this?
Yeah.
This is PM peak hour in 2014.
2014.
Assuming the approved development build out.
Which will definitely all happen within the next 14 months.
Yeah. No question.
And believe it or not, there are pedestrians modeled in this. You can't see them. They're very small.
The colors.
That's a Duke car leaving.
Leaving town.
Westbound.
Yeah.
Eastbound.
Yeah.
Getting to Krzyzewskiville for the game tomorrow night.
So
the cyclists are not shown in this then?
They're not graphically simulated, but they are included in the model. This is a very traffic engineering-centric model, so, there's the way they look at pedestrians and cyclists are conflicting pedestrians, conflicting bikes, and bus blockages. So that's the kind of model it is, but if you know how to use it, you know how to... It does have pedestrian and bicycle level of service, so you can learn some really valuable things about...
Can you pull this back down so that we can see more of the Weaver, where you were before?
Sure.
Weaver and me?
Yeah. So what would happen, because I know we're all entertaining this idea, is there really any potential for the future, where we had a future, I don't know, 8-10 years out, for the East Weaver Street to be closed off and become, what was that, called in Asheville?
Woonerf.
Kind of a Woonerf. We need to come up with another name for Carver, but, to make that a pedestrian street, is that possible? Because looking at this simulation, it really looks possible with the number of cars. You don't see the kind of pileup.
I think it is possible. I think that these two intersections are not on the brink of complete gridlock, even though we've all seen at times when they can get pretty backed up. But in conjunction with that, I think that makes sense in a future where vehicle travel into downtown is discouraged, or starting to look at how parking affects vehicle travel, cruising for parking, and just doing the same things that the town has done for 30 years, which is encouraging bicycle and pedestrian travel. And I think that's certainly something that's not out of the question.
Yeah, Jeff, I have a question. My hometown, we have an intersection in town where it's a college town, so it's where there's a lot of traffic at peak times of the day. And there are crosswalks that kind of go across the street, like Catty Corner, not
diagonal.
Do you know what I mean, like diagonal cross?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a rhyme or a reason to when and how, when those are used, or are you familiar with them, or...
I've experienced them. I'm sure there is kind of criteria for when they are advisable. Usually, seeing them at intersections with very high volumes of pedestrians, like in New York City, I've seen them in Denver, and obviously you've seen them in your hometown. So, very high volumes of pedestrians. But I'd have to look into what the specific criteria are.
They probably wouldn't approach it, I guess, even as busy as it's probably something more like a college.
Well, there is actually such an, it's not marked on the pavement, but there is such an intersection in Chapel Hill at Cameron and Columbia, where when the pedestrian signal indicates crossing, all four directions are stopped completely, and so people can, the pedestrians can move anywhere in that, including diagonally across the intersection. Not too many people do the diagonal direction across it, but it is possible.
They do it, yeah.
Most of the people who cross diagonally there do it when the light is not with
them.
That's
right. That's right. They don't know they're allowed to.
But there is that, and it is I mean, it is set up. I guess what I'm trying to say is the light timing is set up to allow for that, even though there's no particular indication.
Is it where one of them is one way?
Yes.
That is key to it all. Is that
one exactly. Front of the Carolina?
I'm thinking of in my hometown. Actually, one of the roads is one way.
South Columbia is coming into that intersection is one way. But again, you know, it's sort of right at that point where the campus meets the various fraternities, and so over there,
the Carolina Inn,
the Carolina Inn, Granville Towers, and all of that pedestrian traffic. I mean, there's an extremely high pedestrian traffic situation there.
Jeff, how does 300 East Main, when built out, affect the southern portion of Lloyd? Because I don't recall that that's going to be open to traffic there.
One right here?
Yeah, that piece.
Yeah, they have, in their most recent memo, they have a level of service, a level of service D projected for their own site driveway. So this would be, as I understand it, a left turn and a through right going out, and then a one lane going in, and with a level of service D.
One lane going
And in this model, is it? What is the level of service?
Let me think here. That's a good question. I think it's D or possibly E.
Go ahead.
Is there ever any standard kind of correlation between level of service at a peak hour, which is what we're doing the level of service at, and just versus the rest of the day? Is there any kind of, I guess, an F often a D rest of the day, or is a D often a B rest of the day, or does it vary, or is there any standard? Or
The relationship with the PM peak hour is that it's the worst. We didn't look at AM peak hour because AM peak has lower volumes, even in some cases than the midday peak in this area. So PM peak is the worst. You know, you go out there at other times, and even on certain times in the evening, like I was out there yesterday looking at intersections, and some of the intersections had, you know, not too much traffic at them. But in general, the PM is the worst of the worst, and I think it's usually you get 10 to perhaps 20, very rough ballpark percent of all traffic for the day at an intersection occurs during the peak hours, the AM and PM peak hours.
So, if I may, a couple of things. One is that I think by necessity, none of this takes into account the possibility that the cost of driving a car may go up, or perhaps I should say the reality that the cost of the driving a car will go up in the future. Obviously, we don't know what the next, you know, 2 years year or two may hold as far as the cost of driving. But of course, at any point we could have the kind of experience we had 8 years ago, where the cost of gasoline basically doubled overnight. So all of it has to be taken with a huge grain of salt, in the sense that the assumption is that the price of gasoline is sort of only incrementally increasing across the time period you're studying. True.
Yeah, it's true. There's nothing in this software that lets you plug in
that takes that into account. And I just point that out by way of saying that's just a factor that, you know, we can't really plan for, because none of us really have much of an idea of what kind of changes could happen. But we'll note that within the last decade, major changes have happened that way. So there could well be major changes again in the future. Looking over at the intersection of where all the roads come together at Main and Franklin and Merritt Mill and Brewer Lane for a second, I recall that intersection is one that DOT has particularly taken an interest in the past, and it rated high, I think, I recall a few years ago in the TCC's analysis, or in other words, the local staff's analysis of where problematic traffic patterns are happening as far as the need for intersection improvements there. Is that still, that's still basically the conclusion you're drawing, or?
Yeah, I think that this is certainly one to keep an eye on, especially certain approaches like the Merritt Mill approach, and also, as Jackie pointed out, the upstream effect of vehicles, now much more vehicles waiting here to turn left into Boyd Street, the realigned Boyd Street. So,
and for that matter, vehicles turning right out of Boyd Street, coming onto Main Street, too.
Correct, yeah. And then, you have Greenbridge right here. You have Shortbread Lofts going in. You had the University Square redevelopment approved last night down on Franklin Street. So you have some other approved developments that, like all developments, will inevitably add some traffic to
And it's maybe also, I guess, I'm not aware of any sort of specific plans at this point, but it's pretty clear that that St. Paul's AME Church is planning on moving off of Merritt Mill Road up to Rogers Road at some point, not in the study period that you're looking at, but at some point St. Paul's is planning to move to Rogers Road, and they are at some level. I mean, their plan is to sell the existing church building there, and I don't. None of us have any, at this point, any idea of what might replace the church. But almost any other land use besides the church would have a potentially significant new impact on that intersection. Just to say that I think is going to continue to be the problem is just going to get worse. Whatever the scope of the problem is, it's going to be worse in the future. So, and it happens to be right at, and we've talked a time or two. This board has talked a time or two about this issue before, but that is right. Our border is the green on the ground, it's yellow, but on the map it's green line down the middle of Merritt Mill Road. So one side of the intersection is in Chapel Hill and the other side is in Carborough. And I feel like we need to at some point get together with our friends in Chapel Hill, or even people we're not friends with in Chapel Hill, to discuss what the future may hold for that intersection. I guess my real point is, I think it would be better for Chapel Hill and Carborough to have a shared vision for what to do with that intersection rather than letting DOT come up with a plan and having our two towns kind of respond to DOT's ideas.
Have we done that in the past? Have we had any kind of working group to start to address it?
We haven't really. There's been sort of low-level discussion here at our board about the need to have such discussions. I've talked with the current mayor of Chapel Hill and the previous mayor of Chapel Hill about the fact that at some point we need to get together on this, but it seems to me in a way, it's tempting to say, "Well, we should have some kind of, we should literally meet with the Chapel Hill Town Council about this," which is something we haven't done in I don't know
ever.
We haven't done in at least 22 years, according to Jackie. But I really think actually more to the point would be to have property owners and so forth, the stakeholders in the intersection to get together and kind of talk amongst mm-hmm. themselves first and potentially follow it up with some kind of joint meeting. Sammy.
Somewhat related is the opportunity to speak with Chapel Hill, and actually the approval of the development last night, I hope, still allows for it. But the white paper on extending light rail from the hospital to Carrboro, I know they're planning to have a road going through that property, but I also know that it was a 20-year agreement, and I'm not sure if they included the possibility of light rail. And so if staff could check into that and get back to us on the viability of that. So, but it also brings up the point in this model. I don't know if this is the right time, but to be looking at what a light rail would signify for the projections and numbers. Because as I understand it, the light rail would be coming down Franklin Street and then down Main, and then go past Lloyd and somehow get on the rail line there.
And I think it's a such a long-term project that, or not such a long-term project, but it's significantly long-term enough that we're not sure of what the alignment, what that would take.
Right.
It's very conceptual at this point.
Okay. But nevertheless, it's made the sort of the leaving open the potential for a connection through there may be relevant to what happens at this intersection.
So yeah, including the roundabout, but also
or whatever it might be.
So a conversation with Chapel Hill to make sure that they keep those, that if it hasn't been precluded already.
Okay, so I have a question. So this is projecting forward to the build-outs of projects that may be approved or have already been approved. And so, for example, just this intersection, in the last 10 years, has it gotten more congested? Because we're talking about cars being more expensive to drive and people using alternative transportation. And was it an F 10 years ago or D 10 years ago? Or is it the same level of service now? I'm just wondering the impact of those.
I can answer that if I check, if I may check the the table in the traffic study that we did in 2005, which I have right here.
Okay, it'd just be helpful to have context of the impact of this.
Well, while you're looking at that, we'll come back to that in a second. While you're looking at that, did you have a...
I did. I don't know if Jeff can scroll.
No, probably not.
I'm ready with that, but I'm ready to answer your question, too.
Are you ready to...
Either way.
Sure, finish Michelle's then.
Yeah. So it looks like from our 2005 study, if y'all recall that this was done, it took a look at all downtown intersections, and it found that interestingly the midday peak at that Franklin Merritt Mill intersection was F, level service F, so. Lots of people, there must have been a huge demand for Crook's Corner that day. it found that...
That was back when they were open for lunch.
Yeah. it found that in the AM level of service B and in the PM D, so in the PM you can see it kind of on the cusp of being congested, but it is kind of interesting how... I'm sorry if this is small... This should
be.
You can see right here, midday F, PM D, and that's 2003, 2004 traffic volumes.
And now it's F and D. What is it now again?
Well, we haven't finished the analysis for this, so I don't think I have right in front of me like 2013 existing conditions level of service. But that's something that I could find out and get back to you.
But the projection for your study is F.
Projection. We haven't finished the projection, our own projection. But in the Greenbridge TIA, it projected F, and the 300 East Main TIA, it projected D.
So it's getting worse.
It,
and worse.
I think that's safe to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I'm...
Not surprisingly. Okay, Lydia, and then Sam and
me. Yeah, I want to. I guess I want to ask or make the point that Sammy talking about the light rail is of course looking years ahead also, but we hope to see some increased bus ridership and bus routes, perhaps even Triangle Transit coming further into Carrboro with the passage of the transit tax. So we may see some more transit. And also, Jeff, the UNC bicycle connector, is it that, in, you know, I mean, this isn't obviously automobiles, but those high numbers of bicycles, we might see that some of them are able to use the connector once we, and that perhaps would be sometime in the next several years, right?
Correct.
Those were just two other points I wanted to make with regard to all this traffic at these different intersections. But with regard to Mark's observation about the intersection at Merritt Mill Road and Brewer Lane, and you know, I think in light of our the hotel coming in, East Main growing, Greenbridge, University Square, East Franklin or West Franklin, you know, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea for us to maybe make some kind of a motion suggesting that staff formally kind of start some procedure of getting together with Chapel Hill staff to set up some type of a way of getting community input, getting stakeholder input, and particularly because it'll be two jurisdictions kind of working on a solution to that intersection at some point.
That's my thought, yeah.
Okay. Well, sure. And then I'll put that in the form of a motion.
Okay. Well,
actually, we could just add that to attachment A.
Or add it as a...
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's let me hear from Sam Ann. And...
It's not necessarily covered in what the study has looked at, but I just heard from a member of our community who pointed out the Liva Cotton intersection with a stoplight. It has a stop sign for the bikers, but sometimes it's green for cars, and he felt it was very unsafe and just something to look at.
Which intersection was?
The bikeway at Merritt Mill intersection with a road. Mm-hmm.
Merritt Mill and Cameron.
Merritt Mill, Cameron.
Oh, and right. Cameron, Merritt Mill, and the bike one, yeah, mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I mean, maybe a signal for the bikes it has to be looked at. And then today I noticed coming in from Estes onto Weaver Street, because Estes is so narrow and Weaver Street has two turn lanes, there's a backup on Estes while... Weaver Street is pretty...
North Greensboro, you mean.
Yeah. North Greensboro, yeah. North Greensboro is pretty open. And so there may be something to look at there with a signal timing to mitigate that. So a lot of the cars will back up, and then the trigger or the weight or whatever it is doesn't get... It appears like there aren't any cars, and the signal starts over again. And meanwhile, on North Greensboro Street, it's not backed up.
Yeah. Take a look at that.
Thanks.
Okay, so I want to, like Sammy, I want to address one last sort of micro scale issue about all this, which is like many parents in Carrboro, my kids go to the United Taekwondo Academy there on Brewer Lane, and so I experienced this intersection from the Brewer Lane perspective with frequency once or twice a day at least. And I just want to point out that routinely what happens is that when you're waiting on Brewer Lane to turn on to either Franklin or Main Street or even Merritt Mill Road, that the light cycle, first of all, favors Franklin Street, then Merritt Mill Road, and then Brewer Lane. And when the light turns green for Brewer Lane, indicating that the people on Brewer can turn onto any of those streets, that it is typical, especially around the PM peak, that if one were to actually drive out into the intersection as soon as that light turns green, that you would run into a car that was basically running the yellow or red light on Merritt Mill. Mm-hmm. And you know, to the point where if you pull out of there any time between 4:30 in the afternoon and 6:30 in the evening, it is guaranteed that were you to simply pay attention to the green light for Brewer Lane, you would immediately run into a car making, you know, making the kind of extended left turn there onto Main Street. So, you know, and I mean, maybe that's an enforcement issue. Maybe it's just a fact of life for people on Brewer Lane that needs to be accepted. But it seems to me that it's very possible that there's something wrong with the light timing there.
Right.
That really the people on Merritt Mill are not getting an adequate light cycle to make their left turn onto Main Street in the PM peak. And so I would like you to ask Chapel Hill Engineering to take a closer look at that situation there to determine. I swear to you, if I made a video, it would be dramatic. Every cycle of that light, there are, you know, there's at least one, if not two or three cars that are running the red to make that turn from
Merritt Mill.
Northbound on Merritt Mill, left on to westbound on Main Street, where those of us sitting on Brewer Lane are looking at a green light. This isn't about serving the needs of the of the people whose kids go to Taekwondo, but rather about just saying that there seems like there's something wrong with the way that the light timing is happening, because people are sort of the Soviets should say they're voting with their feet. They're voting with their accelerator pedal about what that light timing really should be.
And if you are walking in that area, it is really scary.
Yeah, forget it. Yeah. I mean, it is mm-hmm. extremely ambiguous mm-hmm. for pedestrians. There's not crosswalks, adequate crosswalks marked at all, and part of that has to do with traffic engineering standards and all that. And I understand that, but I'm just saying, it's not a good situation the way that light is timed right now. It seems to me. So
it's not timed for a wide enough turn from Merritt Mill.
That is part of it. The intersection is very wide, and so making the left turn from Merritt Mill onto Main takes longer than one might expect. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all of it is just to say, I don't want to prescribe a solution because I don't know what that solution is. But it seems to me there's something wrong with the way that the lights are timed right now.
Mark, this one does relate to the downtown. They're going east on Main Street at the intersection of kind of Rosemary across from Jesse's Coffee. That signal is kind of not needed unless a pedestrian's wanting to cross. So if you could, or I don't know if you've looked into it, but if there's a way to make it triggered by pedestrians so that it doesn't turn red unnecessarily, that could alleviate some of the traffic there, perhaps.
So in other words, the eastbound traffic is that turn that wants to continue an indirect right onto Main Street is stopped, even though there's no conflict. Right. Obviously,
and that's
no
fairly
crosstalk.
Recent, actually. In the last 5-6 years.
6 years, yeah, something like that. It, my recollection is that our previous staff person in your position looked into that issue once before, but it does still seem like it doesn't make that much sense the way it works right now.
Yeah, there used to be an electronic message board that said no turn on red. Now there's a static sign that says no turn on red.
But
and then the signal
it's
is
it's not just
red.
That, it's yeah. that it's that you it's that if you're heading from Main Street onto Franklin, you sometimes wind up being stopped even though there are no pedestrians you're trying to cross and even though there's no motor vehicle traffic that you would conflict with. Mm-hmm. And it just, anyway, my recollection is DOT kind of looked at that issue a while back and their conclusion, actually my recollection is that at some point in the past, it worked differently. and DOT concluded that DOT's theory was that based on their projections that, that it should be changed to the way it is now. And I think what we're asking is, could we ask DOT to take another look at that question, because it doesn't, it seems like, anyway, it just it seems like it doesn't make very much sense the way it worked. Yeah.
I could do that.
Okay. So is there, so I think the motion effectively, well, would you like to state your motion?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll move attachment A, resolution receiving the report on downtown traffic conditions, along with the, along with my comment that we ask that staff establish some kind of communication with Chapel Hill and perhaps consider getting together some type of a group working with stakeholders to kind of map out what might happen with the intersection of Merritt Mill and Brewer Lane. And additionally, I guess these, I don't know if these other comments that you all have said, if you want to make that a part of this or not, they seemed more.
I think they're specific. They're sort of so specific that they're so specific and kind of immediate that the staff can probably just look at that.
I want to make sure that the conversation brings into consideration the driveway to the new parking deck, because if it doesn't, then it's a waste of time.
Misses a key issue. So, okay, so it's been moved that we receive the report pursuant to the printed resolution, and that we also, if I may characterize it, that we approach the town of Chapel Hill about convening some sort of stakeholder meeting at that intersection to discuss at and near that intersection to discuss what kinds of changes to the intersection might be desirable or people might be interested in order to try and deal with some of the problems there. All right, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank good you, little Jeff. Movie, too.
Oh, thanks.
All right. Jeff may not be a traffic engineer, but I think he did go to NC State. No, he didn't go to NC State. Yeah. Close enough. All right. So I was going to give him some props, but he said he didn't go there. So there you go.
Carolina.
Went to Carolina. All right. Well, so then he's, Jeff, you are suitably shamed so far as basketball is concerned. that brings us to item B2, a response to request for information on tree replacement requirements.
Okay, Mr. Mayor. Tina is going to make the staff report.
Good evening, all. This is a kind of a follow-up report on some inquiries from the board, starting back with the Butler mixed-use approval process, where I believe it was Alderman Coleman who asked about a tree replacement program, and the topic came up more recently with another project where it appeared that the number of trees subject for removal was increasing. So the purpose of this really tonight is to give you an overview of our existing requirements in the ordinance that speak to trees through the development review process. And these are our main sections. These are found in the excerpts included in your packet from the screening and trees articles. The biggie is probably this first one, 15-318. This is the section that includes the specific provisions about identifying trees that exist on the property, the tree survey, identifying those subject to be removed, showing the orange tree protection fencing, and so forth. Section 319 speaks to some situations where the town may require developers to propose some post some sort of security I don't think we need to use this that often, but it is available. And then finally, sections 307, 308, which talk about the use of trees for screening, and section 317, which outlines the requirements for shade trees in our parking lots. There is a very thorough report on this already in your packet. It didn't from 1999, the last time that the board really talked about tree protection in length. It just didn't seem any need to reproduce it. The thing that I found very interesting about the report is, one, that it really gave you a good breakdown of all the sections in the ordinance, and it also offered kind of a series of observations. And this one of them that seemed most relevant was kind of a shift in trend from looking at trees from their protection and replacement as a tree by tree, you know, one for one, for more of a tree canopy approach. And this seems to be the changing trend. We've provided a little bit of information also about other tree protection programs which are coming online now, programs that have been adopted in, say, the last few years rather than in the 80s or 90s as ours was. And this seems to be the trend, is to go more to a canopy approach. So I think that's pretty much a summary. I'm happy to answer any questions or go into things in more detail.
Randy and then Jackie.
I just wanted to check, Tina, whether or not this would be inclusive, any recommendations be inclusive and consistent with the Environmental Advisory Board's the suggested species for the town of Carrboro's accepted species, because there's a list that the Environmental Advisory Board developed, and I want to be sure that it's working with this recommendation, not separate.
As far as I know, maybe I'm not understanding the question, that's already, we already use a recommended list of native species, so...
There's not a recommendation of anything to...
This is really more in the way of a report.
I was, in reading over it, some of the suggestions had to do with being able, you know, if you took down a tree downtown, you could replace one out at the park. Mm-hmm. And I really wasn't that fond of that suggestion. We could... you know, there's that line, they took all the trees and put them in a tree museum, and it would just be a tree museum or a tree zoo, as I was thinking of it. I think we need to try and prevent. I want trees everywhere, not just one place. And certainly, you know, our downtown is changing very rapidly anyway, and to have it treeless on top of it would just be kind of shocking. So I'd like to see us look at, If we're having trouble with trees being damaged or unfairly removed, I'd like to see us increase the penalties for that and step up the protection of the trees downtown rather than saying all the trees will be out in Wilson Park where we don't have room for them anyway. So no tree zoos. Okay.
One of my main concerns is seeing how many of these big trees with a very easy explanation by any developer can be removed. And the concern that more and more what makes our towns, both Chapel Hill, probably even more Chapel Hill with all its amazing oaks over the streets, in danger of being a memory, is to find ways to continue allowing for those beautiful trees to continue providing the shade over the roads and or parking lots. And so I don't feel that we necessarily have done an analysis or consulted with the botanical garden on finding out how it is that those trees exist on Franklin Street and what it would take to think for the future generations on what it would, how they could have trees for their future and not just be in photographs. So I want us to hopefully invite someone, a tree expert, maybe even contract out to do some kind of analysis to see what it does take to have our town continue being the tree city it is, and not lose lose traction to more and more pavement. I mean, we currently have standards such as 20% parking, and that just seems not sufficient. And I don't read if we have any standards for shading over the roads. We saw a proposal for a development recently. There are trees, but they're tiny trees on the sidewalks, and yet the sidewalk is pretty large in that proposal. So the question of whether we'd be able to have big beds, kind of like you find on Franklin Street, to accommodate larger trees. I know one of the concerns is, you know, the root system and the effects it has on things, but I want us to weigh that cost to the all the other benefits that trees provide. I used to live a couple of blocks down from downtown, and you could, just going down Old Pittsboro Road, feel the temperature decrease because of all the trees that exist down there, and how hot it can be uptown in the summer, especially now that we're missing out on winters, and who knows what summers might look like. So the other thing is, we don't have these rules applying for non-residential development. The primary constraints and stream buffer rules included. So I want us to really implement this for those kinds of developments too. And I think those, I've got a lot of other notes, but you know, those are the main concerns I have that I want us to be addressing.
What was the last point you said, Tammy? Or Sammy? You said that it didn't apply to what?
Non-residential development. So on page 6, preliminary staff analysis of tree protections, and the last paragraph, second sentence. And we saw this in the recent Family Dollar development. The standards aren't as high for commercial developments as they are for residential. So to apply these standards of primary constraints to commercial also. And then lastly, to maybe even have a large tree, rare tree inventory for our town, maybe even in the downtown, like to really be thinking about how when proposals come up, to let developers know that we really are serious about wanting to protect some of these trees. The PTA development being an example, there was a huge oak that was just missed from being saved because it was on the edge of where a building was planned. Right over the bike path. So, you know, those kinds of things. And it leads to all these other questions of impervious surface and the viability of trees and parking lots if and how much space impervious surface they would need and the compaction. You know, they're all questions, but I don't feel we've fully looked into them.
I was just curious. I was going to ask Trish, wasn't a tree inventory important old tree species. Wasn't that done back in the 90s?
We've done a GIS analysis of trees, of, you know, tree cover, and then we actually had an intern do some data collection on significant trees, larger trees in the downtown area, residential and commercial. So we had some data on that.
Can you find that? I don't know how old that report is, because if I remember, it can't be.
I'm not sure it may have been in house or something we shared with the planning board.
It'd be relevant to know. Yeah, Sammy.
Just it's really interesting. The previous agenda item projected into the future and described, you know, grades to the roads. Given the current plan or what was allowable in the downtown, it would make sense to have something similar for trees, you know, not just for congestion on roads, but how do we rank in the future with trees in Carrboro given what could likely be developed?
So I think I agree with the thrust of where you're headed with that, Sammy. I think it's worth thinking about, and it's one of those things where you know, the way that you get 100-year-old trees is by planting them now, and then in 100 years from now they'll be 100 years old. And I think that's an important point. One of the challenges, not to say that this means that this doesn't refute in any way any of the points you're making, but one of the challenges is that when you're talking about DOT-controlled roads, which many of, you know, the major roads in downtown mostly are DOT-controlled, that the Department of Transportation has a concern about the possibility of people crashing into trees that are on the edges of roads. And I think we talked about that in the Smith Level Road context in particular, that, you know, the kinds of sort of beautiful avenues that you see in places like Wilmington and many places in North Carolina are under DOT's current rules not replaceable. I mean, that is to say, you can't plant oak trees along major roads, that certainly not along the ones that have high speeds, because DOT doesn't want people to go flinging off the road and smash into a giant oak tree, and so they require you to have cherry trees or
Branson pears.
The dreaded Bradford pears or crepe myrtles or that type of thing, which don't do so much damage to people and to cars when people crash into them. But still, anyway, I wanted to mention that just by way of kind of giving context to the topic, not by way of saying that it can't be done. Particularly, I think, you know, when you're talking about downtown Carrboro, the expectation is that people are going 20, should be going 25, maybe 30 in some places. So hopefully there would be a way to kind of meet that, to do the kinds of things that you're talking about. But some of it may come down to one of those classic confrontations between Carrboro's values and DOT's values. But anyway, so I just mentioned that to give it some context, but I also think let's look at it.
We raised that the question similar, not for downtown, but along the 54 stretch with George a couple of years ago, because there was a citizen who had trees that, you know, he wanted to find out about getting planted, and because of the kind of trees that they were, they didn't meet the standards to be in that median between east and west on 54, mm-hmm. because of the line of sight and how wide the base would be. Isn't that correct, George?
Yeah. All of that.
So,
yeah, with the type of tree, and probably it's not a very sustainable location.
There's a feedback loop problem there, but
so I mean, the both of those examples are higher speed roads, and so maybe it is a question to DOT, like, what do they have a threshold at which there are higher restrictions for what kind of trees you can have? The downtown might be a little different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll just throw out there that, you know, my experience on, say, like on East Rosemary Street in Chapel Hill is that, you know, some of those giant oak trees may cause problems, but they seem totally worth it, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you, Sammy.
Cool,
let's have staff, if you would take a look at that, a closer look at that issue, and maybe report back, especially specifically on the issue that Sammy raised about what the requirements are, what the implications would be for increasing the requirements with respect to commercial mm-hmm. developments in the future. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear about that real, mm-hmm. more specifically.
Thanks.
All right. Is there a resolution?
Attachment A. I'll move that with Mark's recommendation, and also if the staff could fill us in on former reports.
Okay. All right. So moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
We're going to closed session and
clear
the president.
Roger's
wrong. There's a resolution about, before we do that, Jackie, if you don't mind, there's a resolution about confirming the continuation of the historic Rogers Road Neighborhood Task Force. And renewing our appointments to that task force. I believe it's currently Sammy and Michelle who are serving.
I move we reappoint Sammy and Michelle
second
to the task force.
And the rest of the resolution, I'm assuming?
And the rest of the resolution.
Okay. All those, it's been moved and seconded by, moved by Jackie and seconded by Randy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, all.
Sammy and Michelle. For doing that. All right.
Can I just make a point on the board manager memo?
Yes.
Real quick. Thanks. I just want to just point out that this collaboration with Clean Energy Durham is looks really hopeful, and I'm glad that we're engaging in it. They've done a lot of good work in Durham. It's kind of the basis from which you establish education for the community to recognize the value for energy efficiency, and will lay the foundation for folks to really tune into that as a huge opportunity to mitigate climate change and reduce our bills and all the other good stuff that increase your comfort. And it's a community-based effort, so very encouraging. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, I went to one of their sort of focus group meetings recently, and we had a good discussion. Carver Town staff was well represented, so I'm excited about that too.
Awesome.
Thanks for mentioning it. Before we go to closed session, I just want to mention. I know many people. Well, folks may or may not be aware that Nice Price Books on East Main Street over there at, is it Boyd Street? Is Boyd the right name? Yeah, Boyd Street. They're on Boyd Street. They're basically on Main Street, but near the intersection of Boyd and Main Street, which has been a real institution in our community for many years, is closing, I believe, at the end of this month.
March 1st, I think.
Yeah, they'll be closed right at the end of this month. I wanted to say, first of all, as somebody who's a bit of a book collector and somebody who's worked in the used book business, that Nice Price has been a really outstanding business in our community. I believe they're having something of a liquidation sale right now. And so I highly recommend to anybody who loves books, especially used books, to stop by and avail yourself of the opportunity to pick up some of their inventory that they're liquidating. Nice Price is not going out of business altogether. They have at least one other location in Durham. Two other locations. They have a location in Durham and in Raleigh. In Durham, I know, on Broad Street. So check out Nice Price Books, and first of all, and thank you to the folks who've run that business for so many years in Carrboro. The used book industry has changed dramatically over the last 10 years, having to do with the internet and so forth. And it's a tougher business to run as a retail storefront than it was many years ago. We wish them well in the future in their other locations and with whatever they may be doing online. At the same time, I also want to recognize that two really incredible businesses that have been up to now just outside of our downtown, but have really been kind of, at least from their heart and soul, have been a part of Carrboro, are going to be moving within our jurisdiction. Back Alley Bikes, and also, what is it called? Lucky Star, which is sort of the cafe that's next door to Back Alley Bikes. The two of them are moving into that space where Nice Price Books has been, I'm really excited. I think that while it's a real loss to have Nice Price close, that like Nice Price,
Back Alley Bikes is a business that is all about reusing used items and materials in our community. That's a really sustainable and entirely locally owned business. And anyway, I'm really excited about their coming in to replace Nice Price and welcome them and Lucky Star as well to our downtown. So I just wanted to put that out there. Welcome, Back Alley Bikes. We've always felt that you were a part of our community, and we're excited to have you actually within our municipal boundaries. They've got great deals on used bikes and also some of the best service around as far as helping those of us with older bikes to maintain our equipment. So, anyway. All right. Is there a motion to go into closed session pursuant to the incredibly long North Carolina General Statute citation that the manager made?
143.18.11A5 to be
that
exact.
One. All right. It's been moved and seconded that we go into closed session. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thanks very much, y'all. We'll actually take two minutes while the room clears to get ready for our conversation.